Welcome to the MTFN Bizcast, a podcast designed to provide information regarding a variety of legal topics. The attorneys at Meisner, Tierney, Fisher & Nichols host new episodes every month covering topics that are current and relevant to business owners, professionals, and members of the legal community. Although we cannot provide legal advice that you can rely on in these episodes, we do hope that they will be helpful to you if and when you ever do need to seek professional advice.
Welcome back to the MTFN Bizcast. I'm James Cisnoski, an attorney here at MTFN. I specialize in commercial litigation and appellate work, and I'm here with two other attorneys who work on the transactional side of the firm, Adam Tutai, who is a shareholder, and Mark Hamilton. Adam, can you tell us a little bit about your practice?
Sure. As you mentioned, I'm part of our transactional group. I practice primarily in the areas of business organizations, tax, and healthcare, and I tend to style my practice as outside in-house counsel to my clients in a wide variety of industries.
Yeah, today we're going to be talking a little bit about esports and the law. And Mark, you've had some experience in esports, have you not?
Yes, I have. I streamed for an entire year before going to law school after I finished undergrad. I did that for essentially for a living. Made money, got affiliated specifically with Twitch as a streamer, and that kind of spurred my interest a little bit more so in the esports and sports gaming realm, specifically within the law, and kind of helps spur my interest into going to law school.
And you actually did an internship with an esports firm, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I spent a little bit over a year doing an internship with the esports law firm. It was remote, mostly due to COVID and just the nature of the business, actually, being based in New York. And so I did the entire internship multiple days each week over the summer, specifically here from Wisconsin.
And I'm aware that esports is becoming kind of a, you know, sub or micro specialty in the law, and I'm vaguely aware of what esports are simply by sheer dint of having a teenage son. But perhaps you can maybe explain to me and our audience here, what are esports?
Sure. So esports, if we look at it generally, we think of esports kind of as a video game. More or less, when you hear the term esports, you're thinking competitive video games, specifically going to tournaments, things of that sort that focus around producing the game itself as content and treating the game as essentially the sport. If we make that something, for instance, as similar as like basketball, if you're going to spectate a basketball game, instead the idea here is that we're going to spectate a video game.
I'm aware of two of them, and I can't tell the difference between them, but I know one that Overwatch is one I've heard of.
Sure.
And Apex. For the life of me, I can't tell the two apart when I see them on screen. What are the biggest games that are, you know, competitive right now?
Yeah, I mean, I guess your most competitive, most watched games are either League of Legends or Dota. Both of those are a little bit more oriented around either an RPG, which is a role-playing game, or a MOBA, M-O-B-A, game. And these kind of center around a task on the game itself. So you have an objective that you're trying to reach. And instead of it being more of like a shooting-based game where people can think of like a first-person shooter, which seems relatively easy to grasp, this is more or less trying to achieve an objective with your teammates via clicking the screen.
So in terms of how this becomes a legal subfield, I assume it has something to do with money. So where's the money generated in this sort of economy?
Yeah, so money can come from multiple spots. So your top level will be tournaments. This mostly consists of like prize pools, things along those lines where teams compete to win this prize money. And that gets paid out. It just depends on who the organizer is for the tournament. That could be either a centralized or decentralized league. A centralized league is ran by the developer of the video game, and they structure the entirety of the tournament, the league, everything of that sort. Or you have decentralized, which is essentially the developer allowing other sources. It could be people, it could be tournament organizers, anyone who gets the license from the developer to run a tournament. Or I would say that the bigger portion here as it relates to esports is the content creation, specifically streaming portion of esports entirely. When you look at just individuals who can essentially grab their computer, click play, and start a stream, you immediately open yourselves up to a chance of obtaining revenue. And that in and of itself can grow, not just to market the game, but yourself.
And I've certainly seen this, as I'm sure other parents have, that when they're video game playing children, not actually playing games, you find them watching other people playing video sure. games quite often, whether on their computer, on their phone, or at all other times. What are the main platforms that are used for these content creators to stream these things?
Yeah, I'd say your biggest platform, I'd say by like 90%, is Twitch. After Twitch, you have things such as YouTube, Facebook, and then more limitedly is going to be TikTok. TikTok's not necessarily a streaming platform in and of itself like the other three, but Twitch by and far is the largest streaming network, especially live streaming network that you can get. What differentiates Twitch between YouTube, for instance, is YouTube has both a live streaming component and essentially a VOD or video on demand system, which allows you to just watch videos. Most people who refer to YouTube are simply looking up a video and they click play. They're not actually watching a live video. Twitch is different. Although Twitch does broadcast or list VODs per account, that is up to the streamer on how they want to do so. The streamer could limit that entirely, and then in which case Twitch operates solely as just a live gaming, live streaming platform.
So how does somebody make money off of mm-hmm. streaming on one of these platforms? How can they make this a business?
So at first, when you start as like a normal streamer, so someone who just creates an account and starts streaming, your availability to earn money is essentially null, besides things such as donations. Donations come and go. It's not really a stable amount of fixed income or anything of that sort. But once you reach certain milestones, you're then able to obtain a different status on Twitch. So after you have a certain amount of minutes broadcasted, this is, if I remember correctly, around 500 minutes for 30 days. So it's based off of a month. So the prior 30 days is what they base everything off of for your application, if you will, to become an affiliate. So once you have streamed for 500 minutes in the past 30 days, you have at least an average viewership of 3 people, which sounds relatively small, but considering how many people are streaming and uploading content, to get 3 concurrent consistently over 30 days can be semi-difficult at first. At least 50 followers, and then you also have to have multiple broadcasts. So I think it's 7 in the past 30 days. And for you to do that through that month span, you can then apply to become an affiliate. An affiliate then gives you the chance to be able to receive a sub button or a subscribe button, which then anyone watching your content can choose to subscribe to watch to you. This costs $4.99 for a general subscription. So this would be like your tier 1 sub. Then you have tier 2 and tier 3, which go up and increase money. Someone who subscribes as a tier 3 subscriber to your account is paying about $25 per month to watch you. And if we compare that to something like Netflix, which is, again, like $5 a month, it's consistently going up. But if we're looking at it in that way, to try to compare, give you a comparison between, you know, how much things are costing.
So I guess this is betraying a little bit of my own ignorance, but what's the incentive to pay like the $25 a month to go watch somebody?
I guess there's a couple. Now, they might be small in the sense of, I guess it depends who you are. If you like...
I guess, like, with a system like Patreon, right, when mm-hmm. you're producing other types of content, you sort of get some special benefits by,
sure.
You know, joining the Patreon, by, you know, donating a certain amount of money. I'm just not familiar with Twitch at all because that's not my area of expertise.
Yeah, you get... So, this might sound, you know, small or limited, but for some people, especially those who are on Twitch consistently, they want this, which are emotes. Emotes, which serve as basically little emoticons that you can put in the chat that you create. So you get to come up with your own. It could be your face. It could be something random. It could be words, right? You'll see like GG stands for good game. You'll see all these different things kind of just thrown in the chat. And the only way to get the right or ability to create emotes is if you are either affiliated or partnered with Twitch. You then get an allotment of emote slots that increases based off of the amount of subscribers you get. So you start off with 3 based off of the tiers for subs. Everyone will start off with 3. The other 2 that you have are only accessible to those who are either a tier 2 or tier 3 sub of you. And then if you surpass certain milestones of subscribers, this could be, you know, 100, 500. The more you increase, the more emotes you get, and you can upload those consistently, and whoever's a sub or subscriber of you can access those.
So if I'm hearing you right, it's sort of you get to participate in the stream in the kind of a small way by subscribing.
Sure. Yeah. I you know, maybe it makes you feel a little bit closer with the streamer, might get you a little bit more noticed. At the same time, you can do things. Some streamers make it to where you can also access the VOD system, where they'll actually hide all VODs from non-subscribers. So only subscribers can then rewatch content. This might also be a system where they can then not only see those, but see anything that they might have missed, because since the nature of Twitch is a live streaming platform, that's where I guess the incentive comes for those who might have missed your stream, whether it be from work or other reasons.
So bringing this back to kind of a legal topic.
Yeah.
So let's say you know somebody, they or more likely their child is looking at as on the precipice of hitting that first level, being an affiliate. Mm-hmm. That sounds like that's something they have to apply for that status. There'll be some terms and conditions of that status. Is that a real negotiable situation, or is that going to be take it or leave it?
It's take it or leave it. There's no negotiating. The standard affiliate agreement for Twitch is actually posted and publicly available for anyone if they want to see it. They just, you know, just look up affiliate agreement Twitch. You'll be able to pull it up. It's only about 5 pages, and that is subject to change. If Twitch wants to. At any moment, Twitch can make a change. Technically, within that agreement, it states that they will notify you if you are an affiliate of any change that does occur. That way, you're put on notice, I guess, of what you actually are supposed to adhere to. But once you reach that affiliate status, you get in your streamer dashboard on Twitch, you get this different, we'll call it tab, that pops up. And there you actually see a path that lets you know if you reached each one of these goals. You can then click become an affiliate or apply to become an affiliate. And once you do that, you're presented with paperwork. It'll be essentially the agreement that you have to agree to. There will also be a tax form. The tax form is not like a W-2 or anything that relates to you being an employee, because as a streamer for Twitch or for any of the platforms, you're considered an independent contractor and self-employed.
So they just want a W-9, so they got your social. So if you get over $600, you're going to get 1099 at the end of the year from Twitch.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Correct.
And there's a higher level than affiliate, and that's the partnership at Twitch, right?
Yes.
And those are kind of more custom agreements, right?
Yes, those can be. You'll be hard-pressed to find a public partnership agreement, and that's mostly because there is no standard. This kind of differentiates between who the streamer is, maybe how much they do bring in as viewership. You know, you have some streamers who average a month or average per stream 30 to 50,000 viewers, who have about 60,000 or maybe, you know, 10,000 subscribers. You can kind of do the math there if you're basing it off of $4.99 per sub, not including tier 2 or tier 3. It varies. And some of these streamers, you know, who stream consistently, whether it be 8 hours, 10 hours, some longer, draw in this amount of attention and notoriety where once they finally get partnership status, or if they already are, they're presented with a contract. And on some of these streamers actually have exclusivity provisions within them. You can see this not just with Twitch, but for instance, Ninja, who's a popular streamer, when he left Twitch originally to go to Mixer, which has since fallen through, he signed an exclusive agreement with Mixer where only all of his content would only go there, especially live streaming. He was still allowed to post onto YouTube, whether it be, you know, VODs or things of that sort. Once that fell through, Mixer that is, he was able to renegotiate with Twitch. He is now exclusively signed with them. you will not necessarily find that agreement. And within those agreements, there's also going to be a set compensation as well, not just solely based on their subscribers.
Are these partner level streamers in particular, are they always particularly good gamers or just particularly engaging, or sometimes both, sometimes neither?
Sometimes both, sometimes neither, depending who you ask. but you have some people who are partnered and are just genuinely enjoyable to watch, just hilarious, whether or not they produce good content with transitions, everything that constantly changes. It's genuinely fun to watch at times. Then you have others who are just really good at the game. And if you're someone who plays the game consistently and you want to get better at it, odds are, just like, I guess, watching a tutorial to fix, you know, a home appliance, you want to watch a video on how can I get better at this in whatever game it may be, you click and watch.
So Mark, tell me a little bit about it. What kind of money is actually involved here, and how do you make it, you know, in more specific terms?
Yeah, so for those streaming specifically, so if we focus on Twitch again, once you get your subscribe button and you get about $4.99, so we'll say let's make that $5 per month per sub. So if we have 10,000 subscribers and we multiply that by 5, you're looking at $50,000 a month. Now, what makes this a little difficult here is subscribers do fluctuate. Not everyone renews their subscription. It's not technically an auto renewal system. Instead, it pops up. It'll give you a notification. Do you want to renew your subscription? It does this for a few reasons, because there's also a fourth type of subscription, which is technically free for the subscriber, but it's not. It's still income for the streamer. It's because Amazon purchased Twitch. So if you have Amazon Prime, you get one free subscription per month to any streamer you want. It doesn't cost you a dime in the sense of you're not paying for the subscription. You're paying for, I guess, Amazon Prime, but you don't have to pay that. And that operates as a $4.99 sub for the streamer themselves. Outside of that, if we go back to the idea of those who play the game professionally, you have independent contracts there with the organizations, in which case some of these professionals, because the professionals can also stream concurrently with these agreements, will make around, for instance, for LCS, which is League Championship Series, I think in 2020, 2019, we're making roughly $400,000. To put that in perspective, at the same time, Major League Soccer players were making $470,000. And that's only their income for the actual playing of the game professionally.
Yeah, that you just kind of preempted my next question. This is just their salary that they're receiving from the tournament organizer or whoever's paying them. If they're streaming on top of that, that's even more money.
Yes, correct. They would be getting the $400,000 just from their organization. That doesn't even necessarily include prize money. If you're winning and you get, let's say, these League Championship Series tournaments can sometimes be $1 million to multi-million dollar prize pools. If you win that, you are then subject to your percentage of the pool. I guess it depends on your contract. Your team might take a portion. That's, you know, kind of a its own subject there, but they can take a cut if they choose to, or they don't, and then you just split it amongst yourself and your teammates. And that is the income from gaming's like tournament pool, your regular contract, and then you would have streaming income on top of that.
So when I'm telling my teen son that he needs to work on something more productive in his life, I may be in gross error.
You very well could be. Okay. he could be making a lot of money. He could also not. I mean, realistically, not everyone who streams gets a lot of viewership.
This for a year before you even went to law school. I take it that was kind of like a living for you for a whole year. I mean, it seemed to...
Once I finished undergrad and I started this, I think I started it technically before I finished undergrad, because I had finally received a little bit of equipment where I could do this. I had always kind of played video games and did tournaments and stuff like that before, where I had actually like traveled and gone to a couple of tournaments in person or to spectate. And so it kind of felt like a, I don't want to say natural path, but it was something I was always interested in, and I was decently good at it. At least I thought so. So started a stream and started doing that for a little bit and built my own viewership and, it enjoyed it. You're able to make money, but it does fluctuate, I think, a little bit more than the idea of, you know, oh, well, you have 10,000 subs and it's always going to be 10,000 and you're always going to make 50,000 a month. It's not realistic, because think of like Ninja, for instance, who at one point was averaging 100,000 viewers. He might have had equal to that in subscribers. Again, you multiply that by five, you're looking at a lot of money, but now averages about 5,000 to 10,000 viewers. So that's way less subs, way less viewership, and he still has his exclusive contract with Twitch where he's getting a portion of money, but the actual money from subscribers has probably dwindled.
And so it's, as you said, relatively seemingly low threshold to get to that affiliate status. Any clear benchmark of when you get to partner status, or is that kind of a more discretionary with the platform?
Kind of both. There are specific milestones, if you will. So I had mentioned there's a streamer dashboard where you can see different paths. There will also be a path that I believe is like path to partner or something along those lines. And it'll be slight increases from the affiliate agreement, or a little bit more than slight. So instead of streaming for like 7 broadcasted days in the past 30 for an affiliate agreement, for partner, you have to stream at least 25 hours in the last 30 days. You also have to have streamed on 12 different days, not just 7 unique streams, but 12 different days themselves that you streamed. And now you have to average 75 viewers. This is a big increase from 3, considering the idea that, you know, someone who only averages 3 viewers can become an affiliate. Well, they might have like 5 subscribers, let's say, or 10. Now you need to grow from 3 to 75. And it's not just 75 on one day, it has to have been withheld for the previous 30 days. That doesn't guarantee you a partnership status, though. Once you submit the application through that same portal system or dashboard system, Twitch is then makes their subjective opinion. They can decide if they want to offer you partnership or not. And I know multiple streamers who averaged 75 got rejected. I know multiple who averaged 100 or so got rejected multiple times. Some of them have since become partnered. This might have been due to, you know, more increased viewership, but it can also be, you know, your conduct on stream, things that they see, things that have been recorded, whether or not there have been your chat moderation, things of that sort, that kind of all kind of contribute to a community on whether or not Twitch really wants to be partnered with you.
If you were working with somebody that, you know, all of a sudden was presented with a partnership contract, and it sounds like there's maybe they have a template to start with, but again, it's kind of nothing's publicly available. What are some of the terms and conditions, apart from, say, just like the money split, that somebody who's looking to do this for a living, who wanted to be a content creator, and in particular a esports content creator, what are some of the terms and conditions that might be important to them that they should think about in negotiating a contract?
I would say the first thing that comes to mind is to ensure that, although there's likely will be an exclusivity provision, to make sure that you can still upload content elsewhere without it violating any sort of term within your contract, because your streaming value with Twitch and just your brand in general isn't rooted in just the live stream on Twitch itself. Your brand contributes and spans way further than just that live stream. You want to make sure that you can still use your name, especially your in-game name, because likely you're not going by Adam Tutai, you're going by insert a moniker here or some sort of gaming name. And so in that sense, you want to be able to still market that other places, whether it be on TikTok, on YouTube, or things of that sort. There's been the issue before where people who have become partnered, or in the past who even weren't partnered, got banned off of Twitch because they were concurrently streaming not just on Twitch, but also on YouTube. So at the same time, they had multiple live streams going. And to the normal person, that might seem, oh, I can increase my chances of being watched. The issue is Twitch doesn't want you to be able to stream on multiple platforms at the same time and compete with their product as well. So I would ensure that you aren't essentially pigeonholed to being only on Twitch. Of course, you won't be able to concurrently stream, but you want to be able to still use your brand elsewhere.
And then one other, you know, kind of question that pops in my mind is, so we got this whole sub economy kind of growing up here of people kind of creating content where they're basically playing a game that they don't own. It's software. Presumably they own a copy. They have a licensed copy, but they're out there creating this visual content. They're out there, you know, doing examples of game. They're coming on games, but ultimately they're displaying somebody else's game and copyright, whether it be, you know, Valorant or Overwatch or Apex. What do the game developers have to say about this? Do they have any say about how their game gets depicted in these other media? Like, do they have relationships with Twitch, with YouTube, things like that? What do they get to say?
Yeah, so this is a kind of a subject that has been of increased debate, specifically with things such as like DMCA takedowns and stuff along those lines related to Twitch content or VODs. But as it relates to kind of having your game officially listed, if you're the developer or if you're Twitch, for that instance, you contact the developer and you can then get approval or a license to be able to use the game and for it to be broadcasted. So as a streamer on Twitch, you're presented with a list of games. All of these games that are there are essentially approved. Twitch has gotten approval to do so. You'll know this because sometimes they have betas of new video games that come out, and only specific streamers are allowed to do so, and they have to present it with a hashtag ad. For FTC guidelines, they have to make sure they conform to that, and because the actual developer of the video game doesn't want it listed on Twitch as a general, anyone can stream under this. You might be able to have access to the beta, but you can't stream it. And so Twitch will list whatever games they have approval for. As it relates to like YouTube, for instance, that's a little bit more open-ended because there is no list of games on YouTube itself that someone can list their content under. Instead, they just upload their content. There, you're looking more of an intellectual property fair use type of idea because you're adding your own modification, your own use to the game, whether it be your presence, your audio, your commentary, things like that is all contributing to differences to the game. But the developer does, at least with Twitch, have some sort of say on how they want their game to be approved or if they're even going to allow it to be listed there. Someone could still inevitably stream that video game and list it as other or just chatting or something along those lines. And if they do that, then the developer can issue a takedown and they can do that through Twitch, or they could also do it through YouTube as well.
And while you and I practice in the transactional space and certainly, you know, questioning, you know, what kinds of terms and conditions are good to negotiate and be important, what are some of the maybe the possible litigation issues that crop up here? I'm assuming that all these partner agreements and online agreements probably have some kind of arbitration clause such that if there are disputes on those, we're not seeing them in published, you know, opinions. But is there getting to be a body of law here? Are there any kind of reported cases or lawsuits pending that kind of circulate in this esports space? And
yeah, there have been. There have been numerous attempts, let's put it this way, numerous attempts where there have been complaints or things along those lines filed, which have since kind of disappeared, mostly because there have been settlements. The biggest case as of late would be the FaZe and Tfue lawsuit. That was the reason that became so big is because of how big Tfue became.
You'll have to explain what those words mean.
Yes. So Tfue, his real name is Turner Tinney. He is a streamer. He still streams. He kind of started off on Fortnite when it became really big, or even before then, and was presented with a contract with FaZe for how entertaining and good he was at the game. Now,
and maybe explain what FaZe is.
Yeah, so FaZe is a team organization for, think of them as also kind of a brand in of themselves. They have multiple different teams and different titles. So Call of Duty, Valorant. They also own a team in Overwatch, things along those lines. They're an organization that has teams and players and content creators who stream under their title and for FaZe. They're FaZe, let's call it like a Nike athlete, let's call it FaZe athlete, more or less. And so Tfue got a contract with FaZe and at the time signed it, thought no issue. He was presented with a gamer agreement and a contract and signed it. And at the time, he wasn't that big of a streamer. So really, in his mind, and especially in a lot of like young streamers, this seems as kind of like a natural progression, something you want to jump into. I'm being presented with a contract with a big gaming organization. Why wouldn't I do it? And he signs it. He then became bigger than that contract. And he started to notice as he was winning tournaments with his teammate and things like that, that all of his prize money, his streaming revenue, things along those lines were tied to the option for FaZe to essentially withhold around 80%, depending, of that revenue, of the prize pool of streaming, things along those lines, and they could moderate and limit whatever it was that he was doing. And the contract itself progressed throughout multiple levels of the court system without actually going to full-on trial or litigation, if you will. And that was ultimately because they settled. But the premise behind the idea was that there are so many parts of this contract that are either ambiguously stated or entirely one-sided, favoring just FaZe, that I should be entitled to some sort of remuneration, or one, you can't do this in a contract. You can't strip everything from me when I'm the one doing all of the work.
Yeah, so it's an argument that it's unconscionable,
sure,
in some way.
Exactly.
So I think it's kind of an interesting observation. You could start out, it seems like what happened here is you can start out as like a very small fish, and you sign an agreement that's one-sided because that's the only leverage that you've got, and then you, depending on how your career progresses, you could outstrip that like very quickly.
Yeah.
And that's where these problems can come up, is you sign something early on that maybe you shouldn't have signed. Maybe you should have, scrutinized a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly. I think, your chances to grow, especially with streaming, can drastically increase. It can fluctuate, but you have such an increased chance to become bigger than what you are, especially when you're presently considered or presently handed that contract. And so when that arises, you have multiple streamers or multiple people who just kind of see the contract at first and think, well, I have nothing to lose right now. I only have everything to gain by having an organization's name slapped next to me. So why wouldn't I do it?
So Mark, tell us a little bit about these platforms' ability to restrict content creators, because that, your ability to put out content consistently and in the way you want to is a key part of making money on these platforms. But there's a whole bunch of rules and terms that you've got to follow. What does that look like on a platform like Twitch?
Sure. So on Twitch, you have both a code of conduct and community guidelines that you adhere to. You're supposed to adhere to. You have multiple streamers who kind of maybe push the boundary here. These guidelines and code of conduct can string along the lines of you can't say this, can't say that, or it can be along the lines of you can't dress or show yourself in certain ways. There have been multiple streamers who have, we'll put it politely, have had, let's say, fashion mishaps. And along those lines, they've immediately been received with a ban and removal of their content. And this would be for partnered streamers. So Twitch essentially has the unilateral power to take down your content or ban you immediately off of the platform, regardless of you being partnered. And that stakes a big claim in the sense of I'm losing a lot of money as a streamer, especially if my account's down for one day, let alone for a week. And there have been instances in the past where they've actually banned someone and removed their content for 2 weeks and put them on a temporary ban. And in that time, they can't produce any content on Twitch. They could do so elsewhere if they want. But if the majority of their money and viewership comes from Twitch, they have now been stripped of that opportunity.
And is there any process that has to be followed before Twitch does this, or can they just whenever?
Twitch can essentially, whenever they want to, take down that content and block you.
So even if you didn't violate the rules, if somebody thinks that you did at Twitch, they could just ban you and that's that.
Odds are you'll receive, yes and no, odds are you'll receive a notification or some sort of email or correspondence from Twitch that states, what you may have done or might not have done, and they will temporarily ban or restrict you. And in that time, I know this has been for multiple streamers, such as someone that is like Dr. Disrespect, who is currently banned off of Twitch and is now streaming on YouTube due to reasons that are still not revealed. Twitch,
but probably implicit in his name.
Probably.
he has his own problems.
Yeah, he he is now on YouTube, and he received a ban that immediately removed all of his content and removed him entirely off the system. And you can file an appeal internally with Twitch. I don't know exactly how that looks because I haven't gone through it. And I don't know of anyone really close streamer-wise who has. But if they remove your content, you can essentially appeal and write to them and explain either your position or they'll explain to you what occurred. There have also been instances where there have been strikes or DMCA takedowns on all of your VODs, for instance, on not just Twitch, but even YouTube. And that's been something that you can contest with Twitch or with YouTube. But really, that comes down to whoever it is that produced that content. This can even be music played on someone who's IRL streaming, in real life streaming, which means they're just walking around streaming what they're doing, like walking to a park or something like that, and they pass a restaurant that has music playing. That music producer, whoever owns the rights to that, can get a DMCA takedown on your stream for that clip or for that portion of the stream that is saved. And this has been an increased thing where Twitch or YouTube can essentially just take that action on their own.
Are there age limits on how old a content creator has to be? I'm certainly aware, you know, I know my son is in high school and some of his friends have their own Twitch accounts and channels more for private, you know, game use and communication here. But are there actual like partners or affiliates that are, you know, under the age of 18? Are they allowed to do that at that age or and sign contracts?
Yeah, they are. So you have to be 13 or older on Twitch to be able to get partnered, to have an account, anything of that sort. 13 or older. If you're younger than that, you're not supposed to have a Twitch account. You're especially not supposed to be uploading content or streaming on Twitch. But once you reach the age of 13, you can, it's more or less free range. They'll give you the same sort of affiliate agreement, for instance. I guess now in this situation, you're looking more at parental consent than anything. But as if you're 13 or older, you can have all of those same rights as someone who's 18 or older.
I would hope they'd have some kind of parental signature line or something like that at that stage. I assume the laws of infancy and voidance of contracts would probably still apply, yeah. But that's interesting.
Yeah. So an impression that I'm getting, and Mark, maybe you can tell me if this is correct, is that this is kind of one of the reasons this is a developing area of law, is a lot of these terms of service were probably more developed at the beginning when this was more just straight up entertainment. It's like social media-ish sure. type stuff. But now you're getting to the point where your actual use of that social media is a huge part of making you money. But instead of having a more traditional contractual relationship where everything's spelled out and you have mutual rights going back and forth, you have a very one-sided agreement with a platform like Twitch where they could just, you know, ruin your business in a heartbeat if somebody up there doesn't like you or misinterprets the rules or there's a mistake or something like that.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. That's the one flaw I'd say in the system here, especially if you're trying to be an esports creator or be a, you know, streamer along those lines, is you might be able to build such a massive following, but as quickly or as difficult it was to gain that following, it can essentially be just taken from you over one mishap, or not even a mishap, as you stated. It could just be something that was interpreted the wrong way, whether or not you meant it that way or the way the content came across. And in that situation, you're now kind of your whole livelihood or what you're used to doing and what you've built your business foundation on is just taken away from you.
Yeah. And it seems like your only ability to protect yourself, at least on Twitch, would be to, you know, become a partner and then have something specific in your partnership agreement, which I would assume that Ninja, being as big of a thing as he is on streaming, he probably has some protection in there as well.
Sure. Yeah. I'd say your partnership agreements or those who are partnered definitely have the most protection you could get, because they do have a little bit more negotiable, you know, position there, especially for what they bring to the table for Twitch, for instance. But those who are affiliated or just normal people trying to become an affiliate or partner, you're kind of in a situation where you don't have that leverage.
I want to thank everybody for listening today. I've been your host, James Cisnoski, and thank Mark and Adam for taking time to be on the podcast.
Appreciate having us, James.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to this MTFN Bizcast. For more information, please visit our website, mtfn.com. There you can access other podcast episodes, articles, and the contact information for our attorneys. To keep up to date with Meisner, Tierney, Fisher & Nichols, you can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.